You will hear the phrase swept away quite a bit when people start talking about, and we believe they will, Jody Shields' new novel, The Winter Station. You are swept to 1910, to the Russian-occupied city of Harbin in Manchuria, northeastern China, on the Russian border, in the last days of the Russian Empire. An uneasy peace exists between the two cultures in this brutally cold outpost, and then comes the plague. Our guide through this story is a Russian aristocrat, the Baron, as he's called, who's also the region's medical examiner. Married to a Chinese woman, he has a foot in both worlds, learning calligraphy, respecting the mysteries of Chinese medicine, but like a character from Tolstoy, enduring the foolish bureaucracy of his own countrymen. Author Jody Shields joins us from NPR New York. Welcome and congratulations.
Thank you very much.
What a read. And do I understand you found two lines about the real-life Baron in some writing and then tracked down his memoir?
Well, anytime I can spend time in the library works for me. And I was at the New York Academy of Medicine Library. I just happened to be browsing through, you know, medical literature, as one does. and I found a little mention of this forgotten plague in Manchuria and that a baron, an aristocrat, had written about it. And the book had been lost, so I, you know, immediately was electrified, and I launched a search for the book, which I found in Germany, and bought, I think, probably the last copy available, and it was in German. So then a process of finding many translators to help me began.
And you get pulled down this rabbit hole, and I'm imagining incredible research, not just to get the German translation, but to understand Russia and China at this moment in history, 1910, 1911. So what did you find? Tell us, first of all, where are we? What's happening?
Well, Manchuria was an area of China that actually was unexplored for centuries. And the Chinese wanted it, the Russians wanted it, and the Japanese wanted it. So they were all hoping, by virtue of the plague wiping out each other's armies, that they would be able to invade and conquer. So there was a lot riding on who was going to survive.
Well, and this is, you know, you allude to this, you know, 3/4 of the way through the book, the Baron realizes that the military that he's working with, he's the medical examiner, but the Russian army is there, that there's this thinking from some of the leaders that, well, maybe we can play a game of chicken here and see who can kill off the other peoples first. And he's horrified by this.
Yes, he is a fascinating person and remains an enigma, even though I've spent, you know, 5 years trying to decipher his motives. He wasn't really for either side. He was for helping people who had no other voice, basically. Mm-hmm. And he actually was quite a rebel. He married his Chinese wife against the Tsar's wishes and had a Buddhist ceremony.
And then he goes deep into her culture. There are tea ceremonies. I'm reading here in this one passage, a tea that's 100 years old, fermented, pressed into shape with a stone, packed in a lead-lined leather trunk sent overland from Yunnan province. There's calligraphy in one scene with his teacher. He's instructed to release the brush, and he says, put it down. No, release the brush while you hold the brush.
Mm.
So he's trying to understand what to him is a mysterious culture, while trying to convince the Russian bureaucracy that's there that the plague is coming. You know, as you read about how awful this plague became, there are no descriptions horrible enough.
This was the hard part of writing the book, although there were many difficulties. Once one person dies, you don't need to keep going. So I structured it like a murder mystery. People are dying. You don't know why. He has to follow the trail. Once they figure it out, there wasn't much they could do for anyone. So he became a witness as a doctor, and his release was with the tea ceremony and learning calligraphy as a form of discipline and distraction, of course.
Yeah. I was not surprised to find out that you are also an artist, because the detail that you seem to find, and you set it against this horrendous, convulsive plague, but against that, we have these moments of beauty, you know, a frozen arm at a certain angle in a bank of snow, there's a beauty to that. Or rounding a corner and there's a finely dressed woman sitting cross-legged, propped up against a wall. Her family had left her there. And there's almost a beauty in it.
All the scenes of the city that I read about from various witnesses were almost surreal because it was so extraordinary. You would go out in the street and there would be a body there, and then more bodies, and then more bodies. I don't know how people coped, frankly. I would imagine after a while you stop seeing what you saw, if you know what I mean.
Right. And did they really use fireworks to try to get rid of the bacilli, the bacteria that they discovered in a marketplace?
Yes. Fire was, of course, a disinfectant for them, but it was sulfur that the fireworks gave off in a room that they felt could disinfect it. And it was better than tearing the entire building down.
Yeah. What are some of the other things that you discovered had to happen for these people to survive, some things that were done?
Well, the quarantine was quite brutal. It was a smallish town, and there were so many people who were ill that they finally put them into railroad cars. And if they survived in a railroad car, then they would release them. And it was sort of horror piled upon horror. If you survived one way, you might, you know, meet your end in another way.
Right. And what was the Baron saying in his memoir?
That was extraordinary. His book, he realized that no one could be saved, and so he took it as his mission to record all the names of the people that he encountered, because there was no other way they would be remembered.
Because officials weren't doing that. In fact, it was very secretive in the beginning. They were just trying to get rid of the bodies.
Exactly. Everyone was so overwhelmed, and of course, he was one of the few people who actually spoke Chinese. So he would ask them their name, and he would write it down. And in the book, which he published several years later, there's actually page after page after page of Chinese names, and you see whole families had been wiped out. A memento mori is what he ended up publishing.
That you describe in your book, the fiction, you took from his, the memoir.
Oh, yes. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. As you write, a cemetery had been established in the notebook, a monument to the lost. The final document of these lives was compressed into black lines.
In trying to figure out his character, there was one sentence that I read about him that really stuck in my mind, and he wrote, "I realized that when I talked to these patients, this was the last conversation they would have on Earth." Mm. And that propelled me through the book.
And then there's the fear that he, as a doctor, has that he's going to get it and maybe give it to his beautiful wife.
Of course. Everyone was frightened. They didn't understand at that point how it was spread. So, of course, you can't really understand how you can prevent it from spreading. And the things that they would wear to protect themselves, I don't know how they could move or talk, frankly. The goggles that they wore, because the temperature was so cold there, they would, you know, freeze up and they couldn't see anything.
Here's a paragraph. "Gradually, he became preoccupied with the fact that he could carry the thread of sickness. He scoured and cleaned his contaminated hands, wished they could be peeled raw like an orange or a lemon. The rough whorls of his fingerprints should be uncoiled. They were dangerous patterns that trapped bacilli, depositing bacteria on everything he touched, the back of a chair, his pockets, bootlaces, a spoon, circumference of a teacup, edges of a tray, the wadded silk coverlet on the bed. What fear."
Yes, it sounds as if he almost becomes guilty of a crime himself, that he's a criminal and he's left all these clues.
Why don't we know more about this?
All the governments, the Japanese, the Chinese, and the Russian, they all, of course, tried to hide the fact that this was happening, because otherwise the train would shut down. And again, it was a problem with the armies invading. But they were afraid of losing power to each other, and also, if they shut the train down, it was the lifeblood of the city, so there would be no food and riots for the few people who were left. Actually, many nations, France, the United States, they all sent medical teams to help. But again, no one could really stop it.
And yet, we're not giving too much away. It's an historical story, but there is a scene towards the end where there are people walking across ice. Ice plays such a... It's got that kind of Dr. Zhivago feel to it, you know?
Oh, yes, exactly.
There's this beauty of the ice against the starvation or against the suffering. And in this case, these people are just leaving, walking on ice.
That actually is based on a true incident. They did break out of quarantine and walk across the frozen river.
Wow. And what are we to make of this man? What a gentle soul, you know, treating these people in tears, wanting to treat them respectfully, even though the Russians did not treat the Chinese well at all.
Yes.
What are we to make of him and him lost to history?
He's so remarkable. The parts of his books that I had translated, he's very torn, again, between wanting to help the people or bear witness to their suffering and protect his own family and his own life. And how a person decides to stay and try to help is truly remarkable. It really is an enigmatic thing.
Yeah.
And the strangeness of finding his book that had been lost for so long really seemed to be kind of a message in a bottle, if you know what I mean.
Mm.
He wrote the book. He was bearing witness to the people who passed away. He was also a whistleblower, pointing his finger at the way the government's handled this so poorly. And I hope that I brought him out in a way that he would approve, because obviously he hoped his book would have some impact.
You can't be a whistleblower unless someone hears your whistle.
Yes, that's so true. Yeah.
Well, we're thankful for him and for you for finding him. That's Jody Shields. Her new novel, The Winter Station, tells of the plague of 1910-1911 in Russia-occupied Manchuria. It's really quite something. Thanks so much.
Oh, thank you very much.